Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's January 4th. And this is Brad Culp. I've got Sam Grass and Trevor Wolford in the studio with me this morning, and Kevin in Dallas. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Brad.
How y'all doing?
We're fine, beginning of the year.
Yeah, happy New Year.
Yeah.
You're looking like you're dragging a little bit, though. You want to tell us why?
Are you referring to me staying up watching the ball game last night?
I am, yeah.
I thought maybe you were talking about the old age bags under my eye and things.
Well, you know, it's up to you to decide what you want to tell us, but I was referring to the football. So we're right in the middle of bowl week, and thank goodness after tonight we won't have to talk about West Virginia football again for about 8 months.
And Kevin, I'm sure you appreciate this. If West Virginia wins, I'm not working tomorrow.
National holiday, is that it?
Yeah.
West Virginia wins the Orange Bowl.
Exactly.
Lovely. Well, we do have a couple of good games yet to come, so I have had my fill of football over the last few weeks. We got a great show this morning. This morning here in Atlanta, we have Dara McMillan back with us. Good morning, Dara.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Wonderful. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It's good to see you. And in Dallas, we have Kevin, and Kevin is on location at the Dallas Arboretum. And Kevin, I'm just going to send it your way to introduce your guests and carry on.
All right. Thank you. Like you said, I am on location again at the Arboretum. It seems like I was here September? Yeah, September, October. I do have a different guest with me today, though. I have Susan Morgan. She is the Senior Manager of Therapeutic Horticulture. How are you, Susan?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with us today about some of the programs you're working on for 2012. But let's start off with having you give us your background, where you're from, where you went to school, and how you came to be here at the Arboretum.
Sure. Well, I'm not a native Texan. My background, I grew up in East Tennessee at the base of the Appalachian Mountains. My father is a horticulturist, and I guess it ran in the blood. So I have a green thumb, and I went to school at the University of Tennessee, go Vols, sorry for all you dogs fans, and I have a bachelor's degree in ornamental horticulture and landscape design and a master's in public horticulture. I recently have completed a horticultural therapy certificate program through Horticultural Therapy Institute in Colorado State University, and I started out my career in Tennessee, and due to my husband's job relocation, we moved to Dallas. And fortunately, I was able to, about 5 years ago, start working at the Dallas Arboretum in the horticulture department. I helped to oversee the garden management, and beautiful place to come to work every morning.
It is. I couldn't imagine working at a place like this. It is absolutely amazing. We were talking earlier about a lot of the programs that you have in mind for 2012, and I'd like to hear you say again what you're working on, because this is some fantastic stuff, and why don't you just kind of run through what your goal is and why you're doing it?
Sure. Well, I'm really excited to talk about our new initiative in therapeutic horticulture programming that we're going to begin offering here in early 2012. I'm in the final stages of developing my promotional literature to send out to area organizations that serve a wide group of audiences. And initially I'm going to start out with doing a lot of off-site programming, so taking the Arboretum outside of the gates to people that may not have access to the Arboretum. I find that whenever I tell people that I'm a horticulturist, that always starts the beginning of a conversation. So people have whatever their connection is to growing plants or gardening, they have some connection to it, whether or not they have a green thumb or they have what they call a brown thumb. Somebody has a story to tell about plants, and so what I wanted to do is take horticultural therapy programming to people and work with seniors, work with people with disabilities, refugees, veterans, several different kinds of audiences would benefit from these activities. And I might want to explain what horticultural therapy is before I get too involved here. Horticultural therapy is the use of plants, nature, and gardening activities to advance the well-being for its participants. It is typically directed by somebody who has professional training in hort therapy, and it's designed for the participant's therapeutic goals. So when I develop this program, I'll be working with organizations and agencies that serve a variety of populations and work on whatever the therapeutic goals are for that particular group that they're working with. So for seniors, one of the activities, the goals might be to stimulate socialization. So I'll take a flower arranging activity and do a session with a group of about 15 participants, and I'll organize the workstation so that people have to reach across the table, or they have to ask somebody to pass the pruners, or they want the red flower that's at the other end of the table. And so it stimulates that conversation. So then that's the natural lead-in to many other topics of conversation. So therefore, we're reaching that therapeutic goal. Horticultural therapy is a complementary therapy. It's not meant to replace traditional therapies, but it's a complementary therapy. So it's much like art therapy, music therapy, where it takes that innate connection that people have to nature and provides a lot of different beneficial outcomes.
Right. When did the horticulture therapy get its start? Do you know?
Well,
I've never heard of it before, so I'm wondering if it's fairly new.
Well, it has a long history. I mean, people have been gardening, farming, since the beginning of time, essentially. Dr. Benjamin Rush, in about the 1800s, I believe, started a program for people in a mental health facility and were doing gardening activities. And they saw the psychological benefits of doing that exercise, working out in a garden, what the psychological benefits, people reported feeling happier, their moods were elevated. And so from there, there have been many different applications for this amongst a wide audience.
That's very interesting. And you mentioned the flower arranging. What are some of the other activities that you're going to take out to the community and expand the name of the Arboretum?
Well, the sky's the limit. I'll have 45-minute sessions, so they have to be very strict organized activities. So I'll be doing plant propagation type activities, so dividing plants. There's something very therapeutic about getting your hands in soil or taking cuttings off of plants and producing new plants. There's something about the rejuvenation of life, taking from a mother plant and propagating several new plants from that mother plant. We'll be doing flower arranging, making herbal sachets, so it's kind of like aromatherapy. So I think about all the different scents that various flowers and herbs have and what kind of memories that might stimulate for people. Pressed flowers. I have my volunteers. I have several volunteers that are retired or are seniors, actually. And we have been going around the garden the horticulture department has been pulling out flower beds. I've been diligently harvesting flowers and leaves and acorns and other things, and they're pressing the flowers and the leaves so that we can then take that and make pressed flower art cards, what I call art cards. So they're note cards where you take pressed flowers and leaves and you put them onto the note card, and then you use Mod Podge. It's a kind of a glue that dries clear, and they'll put this in. It's like artwork.
Yeah. So. Well, those are excellent. What, as a horticulturalist, what do you find most rewarding about what you do?
Well, there's so many different things that I really enjoy about my chosen career path. I think the number one thing is that I'm a visual learner. I've always been a visual person. So if you try to explain a process to me, I don't understand it unless you show me things. And I remember as an intern at about 10 years ago, whenever I started my career, I took a flower bed that was overrun with weeds, had a lot of dead shrubs and plants in it, and I remember the hard work that was involved in ripping out those dead plants in that unsightly area, preparing the soil, going through that whole process of preparing the flower bed, and then we planted new annuals and shrubs in there, and stepping back at the end of a couple hours and seeing the fruits of my labor. And that's what I've seen all too often for our volunteers here at the Arboretum and elsewhere that I've worked, that people find that enjoyment of working, the hard work that's involved, getting a little bit of exercise, talking with your friends while you're doing it, and then you see the beautiful area that you create. And I hear it whenever I'm working out in the gardens. The visitors stop and ask what we're doing, and they're very curious about the process of that. And they say every time, you have such a beautiful place to come to work. And so I want to share that with people, and so that's what being a horticulturist is for me.
Yeah. I'm really excited about what you're working on here. As a former director of an assisted living, having access to programs like this would have just been fantastic. And I know that the residents where I was would have just absolutely loved doing these. So we talked about the things outside that you're going to be doing. What are some of the things that you're going to be doing here at the Arboretum?
Well, I'll be doing on-site programs eventually, and as we have classroom space available. And we'll just be doing a lot of the same kinds of activities, the craft-oriented, plant-oriented type activities. We do have a lot of other opportunities outside of the therapeutic horticulture program for people to get involved here at the Dallas Arboretum, aside from just visiting. We have working out in the gardens, taking education classes through our adult education program. Those are on general gardening topics. Volunteers can get involved with being a docent for the De Gaulier House. They receive special training to give tours to our visitors of the De Gaulier House. Visitor services, so greeting visitors as they come in, handing out garden information, literature. And we have several different family-friendly special events throughout the year that many of our volunteers get involved with.
That's great. I'm going to put you on the spot here. I didn't mention this to you before we came on the air. And as you start doing this, if you could give a piece of advice to seniors or people to help them or the disabled, what would you tell them based off what you know?
So like a gardening tip?
Sure.
Or?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time that if you were to come to my house, you would not know that I work at the Dallas Arboretum. I'm like the plumber with a leaky faucet at home. My garden, up until this last year, was overrun with weeds. The grass would get pretty tall. Fortunately, I don't live in an HOA subdivision. But I think it's to be smart about what you want to do. So if you have a passion for working with plants and you say that you have a brown thumb, I don't care what anybody tells me. I have killed cactus. I'm a horticulturist. I have killed cactus at home. And there's no shame about that. And I find that it's be smart about what you want to do. So think about the plant choices you make. So am I going to want to do a lot of maintenance on the plant material that I'm working with? Do I just want to go do something, piddle around the yard every so often? So I'll choose the right plants to work with. And also just be brave and just get right into it. I have killed so many plants, but I have made so much many more plants live and be beautiful. And so I think it's just getting out there and doing it. And then the extra thing about being a gardener is the socialization of working with your friends. So going to garden centers and talking to people. The people that work at garden centers typically have a lot of knowledge and are very passionate about working with plants. And so I find that I learn a lot from other people. That was actually something that my dad taught me, that I asked him one time what his most favorite thing about being a horticulturist is. And he says, not a day goes by that he doesn't learn something new about the plant world. And that is so true. And it's not just the plant world, but it's also working with the people that are passionate about plants.
Right. If our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, learn more about your programs, what would the best way for them to contact you be?
To come to the Dallas Arboretum or email me or call me, and I can provide you with my contact information. You can just call me, and I'll send you our information about our new therapeutic horticulture program, and tell you about our services that we'll be offering.
Okay, and what's the best number for them to call you at?
214-515-6595.
Okay, and your email address?
smorgan@dallasarboretum.org.
All right. Well, great. I really appreciate you joining us once again, and it was great information. I'm really excited about what you're doing here, and I look forward to doing what I can to spread the word about it.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. Our pleasure. And with that, we'll send it back to the folks there in Atlanta.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Susan. And Susan, I think if I could read into what you're saying on your tip there is that it's never too late to learn to work out in the garden, and it can be fun and beneficial for seniors. And even if they know nothing about it, they should give it a shot, or maybe come down to the Arboretum and take a class.
Yes, definitely.
Well, again, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back in Atlanta now, and we have a return guest, Dara McMillan. Dara's company is My Accessible Home. She's an owner with her husband in that company. Welcome back, Dara. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year. It's great to be back in the studio.
Well, we talked to you before, and you gave us a little bit of background and history, but for those that missed that interview, why don't we just start by at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about where you're from and where you went to school and how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Well, is it safe to say, living in the South, that I'm originally a New Yorker?
That's normal
okay.
around here.
That's true. Well, I married a Southerner and my son was born here, so doesn't that sort of make me...
Are you a Giants fan?
Not so much.
Because that could be a problem this weekend.
Okay, yeah. Well, then I'm safe. No, I'm originally from New York State and went to graduate school in Boston and then moved here in 96. And we started My Accessible Home in January of 2008. And it came as a result of me working as a social worker. And I was at the time in... Prior to starting the company, I was working in the capacity of doing geriatric care management and assessing clients in their homes and assessing for needs and resources. And I kept finding that as clients, as seniors, were getting older and having a change in their physical functioning, or if, God forbid, you know, they had a stroke or something happened to them, that when they came home from hospital or a rehab situation, oftentimes the home needed to be adapted specifically to their new needs. And it was very hard and far and few between to find companies who knew how to adapt the home by ADA standards and guidelines. And I saw an opportunity to be able to bring in my social work skills and that of my husband, who was a general contractor. It was a great blending of his skills to be able to adapt the homes for clients who've had a change in function, and my skills to be able to assess the needs and bring the support resources to folks for them to successfully be able to remain in this home that they love, or age in place, as the term is now known.
That's really an interesting story. There's a couple of things I want to explore. But first of all, give us an idea of some of the nature of the projects that you do for these individuals.
Yeah, great question. You know, I would say of all the rooms in the home, the bathroom is by far the first area that people often want us to look at and assess for them. And that's, you know, if you think about a bathroom, typically you're looking at smaller areas, surface areas are hard. Then you factor in water and wetness. So you can understand why 80% of falls happen in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, then there's a lot of hip fractures that occur with our senior population, and people are just often never the same after a fall like that. So bathrooms.
Before you leave that subject, you already noted the fact that the bathrooms are cramped, and I can't tell you how many homes I go out into, and these homes have been built maybe in the 50s, even in the 60s. They're typically, it might be a small ranch-style home. It's got a traditional tub, and it's very, very small.
What do you do with something like that?
Great question, too. You look at how somebody manages their personal hygiene. And for a small bathroom, let's say, that has a maybe a steel or a cast iron bathtub, there's an option and a product available that we provide called the Tub Cut. And we're actually one of the only licensed installers of this product in the state of Georgia, although it is offered nationally. And the Tub Cut allows someone to keep their existing bathtub in their home and have a cut out section, whether it's 18 inches, 24 inches, or 30 inches, which reduces the stepping over threshold for folks. So you combine a lower threshold for someone to step in and out of their tub, combined with some grab bars, particularly one 18-inch grab bar, usually vertically held where they can hold on to it as they step in and out. And you put a seat in there so they can not put the stress on their body while they're managing their hygiene. So they're now sitting in a tub shower situation where they can get easily in and out of. And then you've got a grab bar on the long wall for them to grab onto if they feel like they need that support. And then lastly, combine that with a handheld shower head with a long 6-foot hose, you've got really, for not a lot of money, you've got an ideal situation for someone to really maintain some of their independence and be safer in even a smaller quarter.
Does that work for both cast iron and porcelain tubs?
Yeah, it's the neat thing about this product. And I tell everybody, gosh, I wish I had come up with this technology. It can be cut on any type of tub, cast iron, steel, porcelain, acrylic.
And then is there always a door, or can you create like a lip to use 30 inches? Is that wide enough to roll a wheelchair through it?
No, because the lip that's still on there is about 4 to 5 inches. So this Tub Cut product is not an option for someone that's either still taking a soaking bath or needs wheel-in entry.
Okay.
This is a product for, in that case, we would look at doing a barrier-free shower, which the nice thing about barrier-free showers is in recent years they've been made to fit into the footprint of someone's existing bathtub, let's say. So, the Tub Cut is more of an option for someone that can still step in and out with help. Oftentimes, if they have a caregiver, let's say someone from Griswold is providing care and assisting them with showering, a 30-inch would be great because then someone can help them side by side step in. It's wide enough.
And help me visualize this. Is there a door, or is it just an opening with a lip?
The Tub Cut product in particular is just a lip, a 4 or 5 inch step over threshold. There's no door. However, the nice part about the Tub Cut is that we take the piece that's cut out, wrap it up with our business card, and say, put it away for future use. And if, God forbid, someone were to pass away or the homeowner looked to sell the home, we can actually come back and replace that cutout section of the tub in a very seamless fashion, as if it would never have been touched at all. So it's great for resale value.
Now that you've done a good job telling us what you do in the bathroom. What else do you do around the home for the elderly or the handicapped that would be a common project?
Common, I would say, in entryways, in and out, how people access their home, whether it's through a carport or a garage. You know, sometimes there's a couple of steps going into a kitchen, let's say, if that's how people enter their home, whether it's the front door. So we look at ramps, transition pieces that will make it a smoother and safer way for someone to get in and out of their home. Sometimes stairs are still accessible for folks, but they might need something like handrails built and placed specifically for their height and where it's going to work best and safest for them. And doorways, this is a common one. Brad, you were talking about older homes in Atlanta. We see this a lot where the doorways are just so narrow, 24, 28-inch doorways. And if someone's had a change in functioning and they're now in a wheelchair, trying to wheel their chair through a tight doorway, that can lead to a lot of frustration, you can imagine.
Yeah, this is not only an issue with the older homes. I have a home that was built in the late 90s, and into the actual powder room, I guess is what you're going to call it, it would be fine. But getting from the powder room into the wet room where the commode is, there's no way.
Right.
We'd have to start all over again.
Right. So we'll look at...
And I've seen, and it's not just the doorways, it's the angles that they use to build the access. We have one client in particular who has coupled narrow doorways with an odd angle, and when I go to visit her, she takes her walker, turns it sideways, and shoves it through the opening, navigates around some oversized furniture that shouldn't be there, and kind of pushes it out into the other room, and then hobbles into the room after it. And every time I see it happen, I hold my breath
until she's safely seated. Yeah. It's hard. You know, we looked at find solutions that are going to be feasible, first of all, with the structure that's already there. And also, you know, you don't want something that's really cost prohibitive. I mean, we're looking and working with seniors who often don't have a lot of money, or if they've had a change physically, they often have a lot of medical bills surmounting on them. So it's looking at being creative.
Right.
And sometimes offset door hinges can be a useful solution if a doorway is just a little bit too narrow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we can add offset door hinges, which just really replace the hinges that are currently there, but it allows the door to swing back and gives you that extra couple inches. Sometimes it's actually physically widening the door.
Removing the door frame?
Or removing the door altogether sometimes. Yeah.
So these renovations can be as simple, as you said, as taking a door off to make the doorway more accessible, widening the doorway, even up to total renovation of a kitchen to where you bring everything down to the handicap level. Is that true?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of options. Again, you know, looking at people's budget, we work with them to find those solutions that'll work for them. For example, if somebody is really on a budget, but they love to cook, and now they're in a wheelchair, or they need to be in a seated position while they prepare a meal, we might look at making a couple of pull-out drawers that have a solid surface on top. So that now becomes, when they pull the drawer out, that now becomes their lower work surface to work, their workstation. So it's just really looking, it's unique for each client.
You know, and I don't think you've mentioned this yet, or maybe you mentioned it in passing, but I heard at one point that one of the biggest reasons for injuries in the home or accidents in the home is something that could be reasonably simple and inexpensive to fix, and that's lighting.
Right.
Can you talk to that a little
bit? Yeah, I do. I do a lot of presentations and education out in the community, and definitely I'm glad you brought that point up. Lighting is one of the few things that's inexpensive that because as we get older, we lose some of our vision and that acuity, that it's really important to keep every walkway area and entryways well illuminated. So you think about the way you come in and out of your home at night. Maybe, you know, it doesn't cost much to have lights automatically come on a sensor or a motion detector. Making sure that there's adequate lighting in every room of the home, in the hallways. I can't tell you how many homes we'll go in and assess, and we see just tons of light bulbs in the socket, but they're not on. They've burned out.
That's the way my house is.
Yeah. And sometimes it costs us nothing to just sometimes just replace those bulbs for folks when we're already out there doing work. We'll say, you know,
right,
let's make sure we get these working for you.
And it's an interesting point too. I was looking at some outdoor lights not too long ago at the hardware store, and saw that these motion sensing lights really aren't very expensive. So the technology has improved to the point where it's accessible for just about anybody. And not only does it make it a safer environment, but it also makes it a more secure environment, which, you know, can provide an added sense of security to, to the person that lives there.
Absolutely.
Dara, I have a question that, well, I find it interesting, so I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
You and your husband started My Accessible Home in 2008. Not probably the best time to start a new, quote, construction type of company. How have you weathered this storm, so to speak? Basically, that was 4 years ago. You're still here. And has the market, the senior market, the handicap market, is it different than what the normal construction development type of issue is?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm glad you brought that up, too. It's a good point. You would think that wouldn't have been the ideal time to start a construction, let's say, company. But I think what's unique about us is that we were never just a regular construction company. My husband was a general contractor who did the remodeling, and that was not a great time back in 07, 08 for his business. But you factor in the fact that I am a medical social worker who has 20 years of experience in the healthcare industry, and what that means is that we are just not another construction company retrofitting and adapting homes for seniors and people with physical disabilities. We are a healthcare model, a medical model. I'm going in, we're looking at not only the home's needs, but the person's needs. So bringing in my social work experience, it's, you know, I use the expression and most people look at me with like a deer in headlights, but we provide home modifications with a psychosocial approach, which means that we're looking at everything very holistically. Yeah, Sam's already, yeah, he's got deer in headlights.
That. What?
Yeah.
but and you really caught the essence of what my question was. You bring a whole different view and mindset into this arena. You're just not about doing renovation and construction.
Oh gosh, no. Yeah. And anyone that knows me, if you're listening, I mean, anyone that knows me knows my heart is truly about assessing client situations and seeing where I can best connect them and help them. So I like to say I'm sort of I assess needs. I'm an advocate. I'm a coordinator of care services in the community for our clients. We stay in touch with our clients about every 6 months. We're contacting them and reaching back out to them if we haven't heard from them, because oftentimes they'll have future needs. And it's not even future needs about in the home. They may have a future need of, let's say, they've got a family member who now needs a hospital bed or oxygen, and they don't know what company in Atlanta to call that's reputable, that would provide good service. So I love it. You know, again, anyone that knows me, and you guys know me, I love to be the resource queen and just make people just feel so comforted and provide them with the information they need to be successful in their home.
Now, how does it work if somebody would have think they may have an issue in their home or needs an assessment? They just give you a call. Is it something that you charge for? How does that initial assessment work?
Yeah, we charge a lot. It's a big smile. No, I'm just kidding. No, our assessments are free. I don't want money to be an obstacle or a barrier from allowing us to get in someone's home and see what needs they have and see how we can help. So, yeah, that's my fee, is a big old smile and sometimes even a hug.
No, always a hug. I can tell the listening audience that, always a hug.
Well, we have some clients that are pretty sparing with their smiles. So
I don't know. I'm
but
pretty
if you
good
can get
at
one
ringing
out
them
of
out.
Them,
you do
yeah.
a good job.
You've known me long enough. I can work it.
Dara, let's change topics just slightly. I know that within your organization, there are a couple of new things that are happening as far as associates and employees. I also know that there's an upcoming event, I believe in February, that you're going to be involved in. So let's speak to those two.
Yeah, sure. My Accessible Home, I don't want to say just I, because it's our company and we're doing this in conjunction with other people. But what we're doing is offering a free workshop about how to stay compliant when caring for your clients. And this is a free workshop about all the questions you can possibly have about what is HIPAA and how do I know if I'm compliant and how do I know if this applies to me and what do I need to do with my clients' records and information? How do I protect not only myself as a business owner or organization, but how do I make sure that I'm protecting my clients' health records and information? Sometimes we do things and we're not doing it to be in the wrong, but we don't always know.
I think that you need to bring the regulators in and have this workshop for the regulators is what I believe, but that's a whole different subject.
So starting in February, I've teamed up with Paige Joyner of Compliance Plus, who brings a long history of working with compliance issues. She is truly the expert, and I'm super excited to be able to offer this. And if it goes well, which I'm predicting it will, we'll probably be doing this throughout this next quarter. And if anyone is interested in attending and gathering more information about the where and the whens for this workshop starting in February, they can contact me.
Okay. And is there an upcoming trade show also in February?
March.
You're close.
Yes, yes. We can't have it all in the same month. Yet the I don't even know what year it is now, 30-something years, the Spring Atlanta Home Show is at the Cobb Galleria in March, and My Accessible Home is part of an exhibit called A Home for All Ages, All Abilities. And we focus on products and services that we can showcase and let people know that are considered what they call universally designed, meaning that they're products and services that don't look like they're for seniors per se, they don't look like they're for the disabled, they are universally easy to use, functional for anyone of any age, including kids. And it gives people a chance to come and look at a kitchen and a bathroom and different rooms of a house that are universally designed, to see what's out there, new products, what can be done.
So I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm curious, what was the genesis of you deciding to put on a seminar on HIPAA and client confidentiality?
No, that's a great question. I think it started from just me talking with Paige Joyner right before the holidays and you know, reflecting on my 20 years of being a medical social worker, and I've worked in hospitals and rehab settings, and just seeing how important it is to keep patients' information secure and confidential, and yet amongst professionals, there's so much information being shared. How do we know that it's being protected? How can clients and patients feel confident and secure that their information isn't just out there for anybody? So it was kind of a culmination of Paige's experience with compliancy issues and my interest in wanting to make sure that the people that I work with, all of you, including you all, all of my community partners and the relationships I have with folks, I wanted to bring the best, most knowledgeable, most current information on how to stay compliant while you're caring for your clients to the community.
You're not licensed by Department of Community Health.
Oh gosh, no.
And how would HIPAA apply to you and your business, or would it?
Not as much per se in our business, unless I was having a lot of health record information being shared. But typically, the clients aren't sharing a lot of their medical information with us. They're sharing more of their needs in their home setting with us. I think it applies a lot more to hospitals, to home care companies, to home health, to DME, anyone who's really sharing true medical information.
Okay. And I think this is, you know, to our listeners who are involved in assisted living or home care, it's an important topic because technically neither or type of organization deals with medical activity. You know, we're prohibited by law, by regulation, from engaging in medical activity. However, we do become aware of certain medical facts about our clients, and so there's definitely some gray area there that needs to be discussed and well understood.
And there's an expression that they call willful neglect. You know, if you know what you're supposed to do, but you're not doing it, then you can be fined.
Yeah.
And it's going to get more and more strict, you know, in the coming years. So, you know, come to this free seminar. If you can't make it for February, just, you know, you can email me. I'll share my email in a moment. But email me, let me know of your interest, and then we can get you on the on the schedule for another month.
Great. I believe there's another new exciting event or happening with My Accessible Home, and it has to do with a new associate. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, we have just brought on a new I'm the director of marketing officially in my title. She's a community liaison and also a huge support to me for just bringing education to the community, and her name is Lisa McCullough, and she joined our team in November. And what I think is really special about how this came to fruition is that Lisa was a client of ours. Lisa's life journey was that she had a spinal cord injury I guess it's been about 35 years ago. So she's lived as a paraplegic with accessibility needs, and she's amazing at how she functions in the world. And she was having surgery on her neck, and when it was time for her to be discharged, she was given our information so that she can have some grab bars and smaller things done to her home to help her maneuver. And when we met her and she heard about what we do and how we do it, meaning not just a construction company, but a home modification company with the support and services that we provide as me being a social worker, she said, that's just fascinating, and I would love to help you grow. She said, not only do I live with accessibility needs, but I'm also at the, you know, in the end of the baby boomers, yeah. and I want to age in place myself. So everything that we're doing, it just really resonated with her. So she's come on part-time right now, and, you know, we're super excited about just having her come out and support and educate, and I'm just tickled pink.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a great fit, natural fit also.
Yeah.
For the listeners out there who might have some needs in regards to the seniors or their handicap and might be getting this journey down the road, what piece of advice might you give them as they start thinking about what they need or don't need to do?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is be proactive. We tend to procrastinate, especially about things that we don't want to look at, like aging, our aging, and what we might need in the future. But, you know, it doesn't cost anything to have me or my husband or one of our associates come out and just take a look at your home and give you some ideas. And I think that helps on a number of levels. One, it's being proactive about what your home environment might need to have happen. And two, it helps give people an idea of costs, so that allows people to sort of budget, that if it's not something that they have to do or need to do to their home right now, at least they have an idea of, for example, of, you know, what a stair lift might cost.
Right.
If they had a bedroom upstairs and they couldn't ambulate the stairs to get upstairs. So I think just being proactive.
Yeah, that's that is true. I mean, we see it constantly. You know what we do. And it's we don't acknowledge the issues as we grow older until the house is burning down.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. We do need to be proactive. Dara, how can people contact you or My Accessible Home if they wish to do so?
You can reach me by my cell phone at area code 404-274-1488, or you are welcome to email me. I'm going to read out my email. It's Dara at My Accessible Home, and we spell accessible a little bit differently, so I'll spell it out. It's D-A-R-A at MYACCESSABLEHOME.com, like Access Able.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you for being our guest again.
Thank you.
And maybe in about 8 or 9 months, we'll do it again.
I would love it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
We want to thank both our guests. We want to thank Dara here in Atlanta, as well as Susan in Texas. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to Kevin for hosting the Texas segment, and for Trevor for being our producer. We want to remind our listeners that if they wish to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And as always, in closing, the youth of this nation is its greatest national treasure. It goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national resource. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.